Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. Jump in Tucson is a unique format show with different hosts covering a wide variety of topics. Monday is our University of Arizona Wonder Show. And on Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell hosts Engagement. On Wednesdays, Grant Kruger hosts Food for Thought. On Thursday, Tom Moulton hosts Southern Arizona Attraction, sponsored by Visit Tucson. And then on Friday, I host Business and Organization Success Stories. Our guests this morning are two of my favorite students of this semester, Chelsea Shauger and Aiden Roberts. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you two were students of mine in our senior division 400-level course called Applied Advertising. So before we get started, let's just know a little bit about you, what your major is, and what you're doing at the University of Arizona. Aiden, we'll start with you. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Awesome. So my name's Aiden Roberts, and I am currently a marketing major on campus, and I also have a film minor. When I'm at the university, I really focus on a lot of like creative, but also the analytical side of marketing. I enjoy both aspects of it.
Great, fantastic. And Chelsea, how about you?
Hi, yeah, I'm Chelsea, and I'm a double major at the U of A, majoring in marketing and entrepreneurship. I'm heavily involved on campus. I'm a part of Black and Blue Hip Hop Crew, the business fraternity. And one thing I love about marketing is the creative side and combining that with strategy.
That's great. So you both were the leaders. Chelsea, you were in charge, and Aiden, you were the creative director of a class called Applied Advertising in the Department of Marketing in the Elder College. Your instructor is a very good-looking, smart, intelligent, wonderful, did I say good-looking, funny, wonderful, good-looking guy. You were students of mine in this class. So Chelsea, tell us a little bit about what the class is and what you all were doing in for your project.
Yeah, definitely. So on Tuesdays, Dr. Ackerley would teach, but then on Thursdays, he would hand the class over to me, where I would instruct the students to lead a marketing campaign or advertising campaign for this semester. And this semester, we partnered with the Office of Public Safety and worked really closely with Steve Patterson. The goal of the campaign was to empower students to educate themselves on safety so we can all have a safer campus.
Great. So, Aiden, what was the challenge when Steve came in and spoke to the class and talked to them about, since the couple of tragedies on campus and him getting appointed as the director of the Office of Public Safety, one of their big challenges was connecting with students. So what did he say to us and what did he present to us as a challenge that they had in his position?
Absolutely. A lot of the challenges that we encountered when we were approaching this issue was that a lot of the students have already gone through so many years of drills in the past. They also have been really overexposed to all of the safety trainings that have been put out there throughout their education. And so when we come to the collegiate level, a lot of people are not as aware. They're not as aware of the safety regulations. They're not as aware of all of the resources that are on campus. So a big portion of our goal was to really make all of these students as aware as possible and see that there are more opportunities than just what they've previously learned with all of the drills in school.
Great. And so, Chelsea, you were in charge and you were the director of this project. How did you structure the class and tackle that challenge? So you took the 16 students in the class, and how did you structure them and turn them into an agency to approach this?
Yeah, it was definitely very difficult. I've never done anything like this before, but I think the approach I took was a very community approach. The first thing I did was a creative brainstorming session with the entire class, asking the students what does safety mean to them. We were kind of fortunate in the fact that we were the target market for the campaign, so we had a lot of insight on like what we thought would work in a sort of way. So it was a lot of brainstorming, and then I ended up handing off a lot of responsibility towards the end of the semester. Definitely learning to delegate was a struggle, but I would ask the students to come up with ideas in smaller groups, then pitch them, and then we would all talk about it collectively, make a decision, and move forward. And that's pretty much how every class went, is just group discussion, group work, and then asking them to create ideas, and then we talk about them.
Great. And so, Aiden, as the creative director, you went through about 50 different designs. You did stickers, you did posters, you did all sorts of stuff that you created. But what was the overall message that you, that big giant poster, what was the message that you finally settled on and said, this is what we're going to tell students?
So the overall messaging that we were really trying to emphasize is that it's really student awareness is really what's going to push for more awareness on campus and more safety initiatives. So the overall tagline that we ended up coming up with was a smarter today is a safer tomorrow. And so this was really trying to emphasize that more knowledge, more learning now can really benefit a lot of the students in the future.
So one of the activations that you did was to have worked with Director Peter Neff at the campus store, which is a highly active, busy place, Student Union, and he allowed to give you some space. But what did you do the activation on December 5th? What was behind that? What were you trying to do there?
So we wanted to get in front of students. That was our main goal, is for students to pay attention and for students to notice. And as a student myself, I do find myself kind of looking the other way when there's a pop-up, a table, people trying to get your attention. So what we did was we incentivized the students to participate in our safety activation by offering free basketball tickets, prizes, Arizona merch. And so what they would do is they would write on a sticky note what safety means to them, download the Live Safe app, follow the Office of Public Safety on Instagram, and then they could enter to win basketball tickets and spin the wheel for a prize so they could walk away with a gift card or merch or a fun trinket.
So, Aiden, one of the things that you did was to work on some videos that went out, and Chief of Police Chris Olson was our featured person, but some of our students in the class worked with you on a Sunday and did some great videos. Tell us a little bit about that exercise and why you did that.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the target market that we were looking at when it came to Gen Z were very engaged with these video content that's on social media. A lot of the resources that we were finding was that was probably our best way of getting a hold of these students. And when we initially went about creating this campaign, we did a survey asking questions like, for example, do you know what to do in a situation where there's a hostage situation? Do you know what to do when you're walking home at night and it's dark outside and you hear noises? Do you know what the blue phones are? So a lot of those questions we got no answers to. So we really wanted to target those and kind of emphasize the learning aspect of the campaign. And so when we went about that, we really focused on, with these videos, answering those questions from an authority figure, but also having a Gen Z representative within those videos as well. And having that face really, we believed, would help engage the students a little bit more than just it being from an authority figure.
So just a few days ago, December 10th, you wrapped up the whole class by doing a presentation about the challenge that you had, plus what your thinking was, what your executions were, what your activation was, and what your recommendations for the future, and you gave that presentation. So how did the final presentation go on December 10th?
The final presentation went great. It was a nice way to wrap up the entire class. It's a little bit bittersweet. It was a lot of work, so it's nice for it to be over, but it was a great learning experience. The presentation went really well. Everyone came together and contributed and presented what they worked on. And overall, I mean, looking back, I think we accomplished a lot more than I thought we would, and that was a really good feeling.
Well, that's great. When we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about applied learning and what your future careers might look like. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. We'll be back with the Wonder Series on Jump in Tucson after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday Wonder version, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. With us this morning are Chelsea Schauger and Aiden Roberts. They are students in the Applied Advertising class in the University of Arizona Eller College of Management, Department of Marketing. So Applied Advertising is, as it says, as it implies, applied learning is what Marketing 425 is about. It's about giving students an opportunity to get some hands-on exposure. So, Aiden, what did you think about applied learning? Kind of a different kind of a class. You got Tuesday, a knucklehead teacher like me trying to impart some information on the history of advertising and the vernacular of advertising and what we do as advertising professionals. And then on Thursday, you and Chelsea and the other leaders walking the students through an applied learning experience. So what is your takeaway from that, from your perspective of having a class where you're actually doing something?
Yeah, when I first walked into the class, I was trying to decide between this one and another class to stay in for the rest of the semester. And it really pulled me in when we said applied advertising, as in we were actually doing a project that mattered. And so I've done many projects similar to this before. I've a part of a club on campus called DECA, where we do collegiate competitions. And I've done an advertising event for that. But I'd never been able to really actually use the strategies that we've come up with in real life and time. So this gave me an excellent opportunity to try and dip my feet in the waters and try and see if that's a potential career I wanted to pursue.
Right. And you said something very important there, that you could make a difference, because we try to pick activities and things for students in these classes, even though Office of Public Safety is not a glamorous thing and not something, you know, that you want, that's a shiny object and that everybody wants to be attracted to. It actually is a tough challenge. And that's why Steve Patterson came to us and said,
Absolutely.
Hey, it's been tough for us to contact the student population. How can you help us do that? So for you, Chelsea, you're a born leader. You have had great leadership skills in a lot of different ways. I happened to be at Bill and I were both at the presentation at homecoming when your dance crew did their little presentation. I saw you there. I imagine that you're pretty much one of the leaders of that as well, helping to coordinate and make all that happen. And so, and you're an entrepreneur. So, leadership. What did you learn about leadership when you took on this role? You ran for it, and your
yes.
peers voted you in as the leader. What was it like to be the leader of applied advertising?
It was one of the most rewarding and standout experiences of my college career so far. It was really interesting because I had never done a leadership role like this before. And I remember talking to my mom about it. It's like, I'm learning how to do something for the first time, but I'm learning how to do it on a stage in front of 16 people who are also my peers. And it was extremely humbling to mess up and do the wrong thing or maybe not lead the class in the way I wanted to. So it was a very enlightening experience. And I think I learned a lot about delegating and trusting others. I think sometimes I feel bad handing off responsibility because will you do this? It feels weird to ask your peers to do this work for you because you are on the same playing field as them. So it was really interesting to try to ask people to do things. But something I learned is people will respect you more when you trust them to do things for you, and they want that weight to carry, and they want to feel trusted, and they want to feel productive. So I think the minute I started handing off tasks and allowing others to contribute, people became a lot more engaged, and it was really cool to see that people want to work, and they want that trust, and they want that validation, and so don't hold back as a leader. Let people help you because they feel validated when you do that.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we worked on with you was early on in the semester, people would say, we want to do this and that, and it would kind of fall on you, and you'd kind of take that mantle and say, I'm going to be the one that does this, or this is how we're going to, execute this. And I pulled you aside and said, you need to give up that that responsibility and don't put it all on your shoulders. And then people like Aiden stepped up. Oh my goodness gracious, she was amazing.
Yes.
And Kendall and the mm-hmm. other directors. It was pretty amazing what happened mm-hmm. when that all came together. So this is an experience. You guys, you have another mm-hmm. semester to go, both
yes.
of you. One of the things that we're working on, you both step forward. I invited you to join Ad Team, which is the National Student Advertising Competition Team. And we've kind of been muddling along the first semester here. The rubber doesn't hit the road really until the spring semester when we have similar kind of a competition, but this is against other universities, and that's happening in the first weekend of April 2025. So tell me a little bit about your challenge with Ad Team. You've got 9,657 other obligations on your plates, and yet I've asked you to step into Ad Team and try to provide some content and some leadership there. So Aiden, tell me about your experience on Ad Team so far and what the future might look like there.
Yeah, I was invited to join it by Dr. Ed Ackerley. And so when I did, I was really excited to be able to learn about creating advertising campaigns within a group. And so I feel like running through the issues we've had during the semester, but also the strengths that we've come up with, is really been beneficial to learn how do we approach a project like this in a group setting. And so that has really been beneficial to me, because in the past, I've only done this when I've in a singular person or in a pairing. So being able to do this with several people has been really enlightening, especially when it comes to the creative aspect.
Right. And we're doing a national campaign for AT&T, trying to get people your age group to select AT&T as their phone provider. That's kind of a difficult task when there's 9,000 other options for people out there. So for you, Chelsea, I noticed you've been sitting back and trying to sit on your hands and not interject every single second during ad team. That's probably been tough for you because you like to get involved and be active. Yes. And so forth. So what's your view of ad team at this point?
I think it's a great opportunity. I mean, the reason I decided to take on another club is because it correlates directly to what I want to do with the rest of my life. So, I mean, why not take that opportunity? I think something that I've been trying to implement within Ad Team is sitting back and absorbing. I think sometimes I jump into leadership too fast, and I think there's a lot to learn from watching other leaders and how they approach it. So I've tried to be really apprehensive with like what I do in the room to try to learn from others as much as I can, because, you know, we're only in college for one more semester.
Right. Speaking of which, you're going to graduate in May, and what does your future look like? What do you want to be? So Aiden, what do you want to be? You're a creative person. You're a film and television person as well as a marketing person. What does your career look like? What are some of the opportunities that you're thinking about and exploring?
Yeah, as it directly pertains to the advertising class that we've been in, I really wanted to start out in an advertising agency so that I have the opportunity to kind of dip my feet in all of the different areas. Like, I love the creative, but I also want to learn more about the strategy of how these things are actually created in the real world. And I also want to learn more about trusting other creatives, like Chelsea's been mentioning within our class. Being able to trust all of these different individuals to come up with those cohesive ideas is going to be really impactful for me in the future. And so past that, I definitely want to go into maybe a creative route. I'm still playing around with, do I want to go into the film industry, but also do I want to go into traditional advertising within companies? It's kind of how I want to see how the first step into advertising agencies go.
Fantastic. And what about you, Chelsea? What does your future look like? You're a dancer, you're an entrepreneur, you're a marketer, you're an amazing leader. Well, what are you looking for?
That's a great question. I think ditto a lot of what Aiden said. Agency side, I think, is something I definitely want to explore, and then maybe transition to in-house marketing. I think my favorite thing to do is just create ideas and watch things come to life. And I think that process is something that I'm really in love with. So whether that takes shape like an agency, or if I'm going into another industry, or if I go forward with this entrepreneurship thing, I think just staying creative and staying curious is something I really want to do, but I'd love to dive into the marketing industry. So if anyone will have me, I'm more than happy to. This is me asking for job offers. But yeah, I think I'm keeping a really open mind. I've got an internship next semester, so maybe that'll play out. But I guess we'll see. Just marketing in general and advertising is kind of the goal right now.
One of the benefits of you having a teacher who was once the chairman of the American Advertising Federation across the country, we've made a call out to Ogilvy in Chicago to see if maybe they might take you on in their program that they have there, which is a pretty powerful program. And she's we're keeping our fingers crossed that she comes back, and maybe the 2025 Ogilvy residency might be in your future, which would give you an experience in a worldwide advertising agency. One of the first, David Ogilvy, of course, who we talked about a lot in class. So, well, you guys have been doing great work. We appreciate what you did for the Office of Public Safety. I know Steve Patterson is very, very excited about what you've done, and Chris Olson, the police chief. And, you know, the department is proud of you, too. I was in a meeting yesterday with our department the assistant department chair who's over undergraduate studies, really looking at what we're doing in that class, and really proud of what your results are. So congratulations to you on that. And I'm going to twist your arm here in public and say we need some people to step up and help us run the ad team through the spring of 2025. I want you to sleep on it and think about it.
Will do.
And we're going to do some recruiting and get some more people involved in that in the spring semester. We'd like to thank Chelsea Shauger and Aiden Roberts for joining us on Wonder Monday, celebrating the good things at the University of Arizona. I just have to say, as a point of personal privilege, college, that one of the reasons I've been at the college for over 30 years, 35 years now, is the outcomes and watching young people like yourselves. I got a football the other day from Tyler Loop, the 62-yard winning that field goal that he kicked. I got a ball, and he gave it to me. And to see guys like that and people like you that are succeeding in life and doing wonderful things on campus is just a real joy. It's a personal pleasure of mine. So thank you for being here this morning. Good luck to you in your future, and we'll see you on finals day. We got one more final to take, and you guys are going to ace it because you're wonderful. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. We'll be back after a word from our great sponsors with the second half of the show. This is KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, and you're listening to Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. This is Wonder Monday, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. We talk to scientists, we talk to researchers, we talk to students, and we talk to people who are doing good work in our community and around the world in research and other things. Our guest for this segment is Dr. Sai Parthasarathi. He is a professor of medicine, chief of the Division of Pulmonary Allergy, Critical Care, and Sleep Medicine. He's the director for the Center of Sleep, Circadian, and Neuroscience Research at the U of A Health Sciences. He's the medical director for the Center of Sleep Disorders at Banner University Medical Center. So you do a lot of sleeping on the job, is what they say, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Jump in Tucson. And we're going to talk a little bit about your specialty, which is sleep disorders and helping people with that. But before we get to that, why don't we talk a little bit about you and your educational journey and how you got to the University of Arizona?
Yeah, I went to medical school in India, in Chennai, and I came to the U.S. in 92, and I worked at the Cook County Hospital in Chicago, and my journey through Loyola University, where I was for 12 years, and then I got here in 2004. So I've been on the faculty at the U of A since 2004, so this was the 20th year.
And happy anniversary. That you get a gold pen or something, or a set of goblets or something from somebody for being here for 20 years.
Five years ago, I got a lapel pin, so I'm hoping for something bigger than that.
Yeah, so. I'm not to be silly here, but I got something for being nice for 20 or 25 years or whatever it was, and the box was nicer than what was inside. I think that was a message that they were sending me. So
It's the recognition.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? And but the first 7 years, although I was on faculty at the U of A, my clinical work was at the Southern Arizona VA healthcare system.
Oh, great.
And so even when I was in Chicago, I served the veterans in the Heinz VA hospital that was affiliated with Loyola University Chicago. So
thank you for doing that. That's a very important role. Yeah.
That's the least that we can do for men who, you know, and women who serve the country.
Right.
And so through that journey, I've learned a lot. And having gotten here, I understand sort of the clinical side and the research side and how the research side needs to benefit patients and people across the country.
Right. And so you have a multitude of titles, which I read off, which are amazing that you have all these titles at both the College of Medicine and at the Health Sciences Center and at the Banner. What is your responsibility there on a day-to-day, a week-to-week, month-to-month basis? What is your role there?
I have an administrative role. I have a research role, and I never want to not be in the trenches and seeing patients in clinic or in the ICU. I try to have a sort of a diversified portfolio because that keeps my life interesting and my brain, you know, sharp. And so I think directing a division of 30 faculty and 10 advanced practitioners, directing a center that over the past 10 years, we just did an analysis. The Center for Sleep, Circadian Neuroscience has been in existence for 10 years now. So this is kind of our 10th year anniversary. And if we cumulatively add the amount of research dollars that the center and the center people have brought in, it's about $83 million.
Wow.
And that's not counting what's in tap for next year. So it has been a, you know, fantastic journey. And I try to have a very diversified portfolio as to what I do from an administrative, clinical, and a research standpoint, because they all meld into each other because they're part of the tripartite mission. But we made it a quadratic mission or quattro mission during the COVID pandemic by doing community engaged research and community engaged alliances that we have created to help promote various health aspects, both during the pandemic as well as now with chronic medical conditions that we're dealing with, and especially a focus on health disparities.
So we're talking with Dr. Sai Parthasarathi. Did I get that right? Parasarathi. There we go. Parasarathi, who is a professor of medicine at the University of Arizona, in charge of the sleep circadian neuroscience research at the U of A Health Sciences, and also the medical director for sleep disorders at Banner. And so, you know, one of the things that a lot of people all across the world, but definitely in America, suffer with is something called sleep apnea. So what is sleep apnea?
So sleep apnea is a condition that afflicts people at night, where their throat collapses. You know, it's the extreme form of snoring. When they're snoring, that means it's a partial collapse. But there can be a complete collapse, and they momentarily, for about 10 seconds, stop breathing. And that leads to a reduced oxygen count and increased carbon dioxide count, because that's what the lungs do. They blow off the carbon dioxide and take in the oxygen. And as a result, they awaken from their sleep. As a result, they also get stress on their heart, which actually has to work harder and pump faster for less pay. So the heart is working more for less pay because it gets less oxygen, because oxygen count is low. And that is a repetitive condition. And some people can have about 120 times an hour, they can actually stop breathing. But it's like a vampire, you know, in the sense that they go to sleep, they don't know they have this condition. They know kind of that they snore, someone has told them they snore and stop breathing. But the vampire that is sleep apnea sucks them off all the energy and blood, you know, during the night, not blood per se, but sort of their vitality. So they wake up feeling unrefreshed, and they wake up feeling sleepy and tired, and that is sleep apnea.
It's because they haven't got that deep sleep. They haven't been getting into REM sleep. They haven't really been into 8 hours of actual rest. They've been actually fighting the entire night, trying to stay awake, or trying to stay asleep, but you're not breathing, so you wake up in a panic, and you start over again. And that happens, as you say, many times an hour, right?
Yeah. The sleep is fragmented, as you said, and they don't get into the deep, restorative, brain-charging, energy-charging sleep. But the low oxygen count that comes with that, it also damages parts of the brain. So the brain actually doesn't get oxygen. The brain is exquisitely sensitive to the need for oxygen, so it affects cognition down the road. So it pretty much affects every cell in the body, because every cell in the body needs oxygen. And for 8 hours, that's a third of our lifetime we spend sleeping. So it can have an enormous additive effect.
And so you said that obviously if someone told you you were snoring, you would guess you would snore. And maybe sometimes you wake yourself up because you've made a loud noise or something. You kind of wake up and kind of realize maybe you're snoring. But how do you diagnose sleep apnea? How do you know if you have it?
Yeah, the key thing is for people to bring it up with their doctor, that they're feeling sleepy and tired, and they've been told that they snore or they stop breathing. There are other symptoms as well, waking up with a dry mouth, waking up with a headache that dissipates spontaneously. And then the physician can, or the healthcare provider, can order a sleep study. And nowadays, we do home sleep studies for the convenience of the patient. So I would say about 50% of the sleep studies we do are in patients' comfort in their own home. So they get a small unit that they can wear. Some companies even ship it to them with a FedEx return envelope. And so it's very easy for someone to get it tested. It's only when that test doesn't show apnea, but we still suspect, that's when they need to come into the sleep lab and sleep in the hospital or in the sleep center.
So some cases are more complicated than others. Some are easily detectable, and some need a little bit more focus. And that's why a sleep center would be something to stay overnight, basically, and be tested, or during the day, whenever you sleep, to try and see what your sleep patterns are and so forth. And so how many people in the world, or let's maybe just say the United States, are affected by sleep apnea? Is it a pretty large amount of people?
It is. So out of 230 million people in the United States, the estimate is around 47 million people have obstructive sleep apnea.
Wow.
And what is worrisome is that only 1 in 3 patients with sleep apnea have been diagnosed. So 2/3 of them. And so what we have diagnosed is just the top of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
2/3 of the people with sleep apnea don't even know they have it. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that on the long term, there have been research studies in Tucson. The University of Arizona has been part of a 6-site study called the Sleep Heart Health Study, which has proven the connection between sleep apnea and cardiovascular disease. People with sleep apnea are twice as more likely to have heart attacks and 3 times more likely to have a stroke.
Wow, that's pretty startling figures. And so if one has sleep apnea, they need to get diagnosed, and they need to talk about what they can do to help mitigate that. So when we come back after the break, we'll talk about the gold standard right now for what people can do to mitigate the effects of sleep apnea. And we'll talk a little bit about your research that you've just published, which is about some peer mentoring that goes on with those folks that have it. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI. This is Ed Ackerley, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more with Dr. Sai Parthasarathy about sleep apnea and the cures and the gold standard for taking care of that condition. And we'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host. This is the Monday Wonder Series, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona in research and all the great things that are happening on both sides of Speedway, the health sciences side, but also on the other side, engineering and other things that are producing great things for the world and for our Southern Arizona community. With us in studio is Dr. Sai Parthasarathy. I got it right that time. He's the professor of medicine. He is also the chief division of in the Division of Pulmonary Allergy Critical Care and Sleep Medicine. He's the director of the Center for Sleep, Circadian, and Neuroscience Research at UA Health Sciences, and he's the medical director for the Center for Sleep Disorders at Banner University Medical Center. So you've got all those bases covered. We've talked about sleep apnea and how critical that is for people to get diagnosed and for them to understand what the ramifications are of having disruptive sleep during the evening and during the night and not getting that 8 hours of needed sleep. So let's talk about the gold standard, which is the CPAP machine, and how that has helped mitigate for those 47 million people who might have this condition, how that CPAP machine has been able to help people sleep through the night.
Yeah, the CPAP machine was an invention that happened in 1981. A gentleman by the name of Colin Sullivan is essentially, as I mentioned to you earlier, sleep apnea is because the throat, which is like a soft rubber tube, collapses. It's almost like the inner tube of a bicycle tire or a car tire. Mm-hmm. But our idea is to keep it open, and the muscles are weak, and they're not able to keep the throat open. So what we do is apply pressurized air, just like we would in a bicycle tire or car tire, to keep it inflated with an air splint so that it's open, so that it does not collapse, doesn't create the snoring, doesn't create the blockage. And as a result, the person is able to calmly sleep through the night. And because their sleep is not fragmented or disrupted, they're able to get into deeper sleep. And because the throat is not collapsing, they don't have the low oxygen count, which is harmful both to the brain and heart and other vital organs. And so it's almost like when the invention was done by Dr. Colin Sullivan in Australia, essentially what he did was he took a vacuum and reverse the polarity of the vacuum. So instead of sucking air, it was blowing air. So the very first prototype of a CPAP machine was a vacuum pump that was reversed. I'm not recommending people try that at home, but it's a very simple technology when you look back. It's an air cushion splint to keep the throat from collapsing so that people can wear it with a comfortable mask and sleep out through the night.
What do you think, if you said there's 47 million people that might be afflicted with sleep apnea, what's the number of those people that have who've been diagnosed who use CPAP machines? Is it pretty high?
It is. CPAP is considered the gold standard of treatment, although there are some people, you know, questioning that right now for the following reason, is because we did a study a while ago, which was contrary to what maybe some of the industry manufacturers of CPAP are doing. They said, well, the adherence is something like 70%, which means 30% of people are not adhering to it as they're supposed to. Mm-hmm. Now, compare that to people taking cholesterol pills or blood pressure pills. That's about 90%. So 70% is 20 points lower than that. Mm-hmm. But when we did an analysis where we took people across all socioeconomic strata across the U.S. in 250,000 people using a large database, we found that only 47% of individuals in the U.S. were using the CPAP in an adherent manner. And so CPAP non-adherence, not using the CPAP, even though they went through the testing and they were given the CPAP machine, is a major problem that's affecting not only people's lives, but it's also hampering research, where we can actually do a research study, which is a large study done in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Europe, but not in the U.S., a multi-center study called the SAVE study. It was sleep apnea and vascular events study, but it was called SAVE in order to save these people from developing heart attacks and strokes. But that study was hampered because the people in the treatment group were not using the CPAP like they're supposed to.
Right.
So this is not only hampering people's lives from being able to improve, but it's also hampering the research and advancing to show not only is sleep apnea associated with a heart attack and stroke risk, but that treating the sleep apnea effectively can actually reduce the stroke risk. And in that study, when they looked at the people who are adherent, not all people assigned to treatment group, but just the people who are adherent, they found a 2 to 2.5-fold reduction in heart attacks and strokes.
Wow. So very significant. And so you did some research with 263 sleep apnea patients who were new to CPAP treatment, and you did a 6-month clinical trial and divided them into two groups. And what was the result of that and this concept of peer mentoring?
Yeah, you know, I did want to mention that the concept of peer mentoring, if I can answer that first, came actually from my patient, mm-hmm. who was a veteran, who said, I mean, I distinctly remember sitting in front of me in clinic and telling me that this CPAP machine has transformed my life, doc. And if there's anybody else that's not using the CPAP machine, put them in front of me and I'll make sure they use them. So a spark went off in my head, but the idea was that of the patient, mm-hmm. that maybe we should do peer-to-peer mentoring in order to promote CPAP adherence. And so that's how the idea, you know, came about. A lot of times we do research because we have a sort of a spark in the idea, in the brain, and then we do that research. But here, this was essentially a patient need that originated the idea. So what we did was we assigned these 263 people to two arms. One was not only a peer-driven intervention, peer-to-peer conversation through an interactive voice response phone system, but also in-person visits so that they can show them how to take the machine apart, put it back together like a Marine with the eyes mm-hmm. closed. They can disassemble their pistol, so on and so forth, but also be able to show them how to clean it, how to put the mask on, and give them confidence and encouragement. So they were acting as a coach, as an educator, as someone that they can lean on to support on, and they could reach them at any time during the study at a set amount of times over a 6-month period in order to help improve not only the CPAP adherence, but also patient satisfaction. A lot of patients are dissatisfied with healthcare right now, with chronic care treatments, because the healthcare system is very complex. And to get to people, get to the provider, get to someone who can help them, they have to navigate that treacherous maze. Mm-hmm. So what we ended up doing is not only did we do this peer-to-peer intervention, but we also try to care coordinate their care through the interactive voice response system.
And so the result of this was is there was a dramatic increase of those people that did receive this peer mentoring, that they adhered to their CPAP machine and used it and were kind of encouraged to be an active participant in their own healthcare, as opposed to not turning it on tonight because I'm too tired and I don't want to mess with it. So it helped move the needle a little bit, if you will, in terms of people's use of what they were supposed to be doing.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, that statistic of, you know, 47% only being adherent. In our study, the control group, which, you know, was not the group that received the peer support, they were at around 52%, but the treatment group was at 10 points higher at 62% of them being adherent. So there was a significant 10-point jump in the adherence in the group, and the patient satisfaction rate was high. And so when we look at value-based care and patient-centered care, we put that as an important outcome, and patients were 2.5-fold, 250% more likely to say that they were satisfied with care because they had a good outcome.
Wow, that's amazing. And of course, you've said this is scalable and possibility of it being used in some other settings, not just CPAP, but other things that people are having, whether it be taking your diabetic medicine or whatever it would be, peer-to-peer mentoring might be a thing. Well, we really appreciate you coming in today and sharing with us your research on sleep apnea. And hey, if you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson and share your success story, go to jumpintucson.com and let us know a little bit about you. And who knows, maybe you'll be live on the air, maybe on a Monday series when we talk about Wonder at the University of Arizona. Jump in Tucson broadcast from the Bustos Media Studios at KVOI 1030 AM Radio. We'd like to thank Dr. Sai Parthasarathi for coming in and talking to us about sleep apnea and CPAP machines and how people should get diagnosed and use these and use some peer mentoring to help them stay on track. Jump in Tucson broadcast from Bustos Media. Thank you for listening, and we hope that you will jump in Tucson.